Do you guys ever like write shit down on your phone before you go to bed or like right as you're falling asleep?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, I do.
So I do also, but then I look at them the next day and they don't make any sense. And I was wondering if I could read a couple of them to you guys and see if you have any idea what the hell I was talking about or thinking about.
Go for it.
The first one is called Dumped Comic. And I don't know if it's supposed to be a comic book or a sitcom about a comedian who keeps getting dumped or something to do with poop.
Maybe poop.
The next entry says, Snore, period. The movie passes through sleeping together. And I
Welcome
don't know what
to
that
Sit in a
means at
Chalk
all.
Shop. Watch,
And then the
chalk,
last thing that I'm going to
retrofit.
mention today is Meryl Sheep.
I like Meryl Sheep. That's kind of like a Wallace and Gromit animated flick with Meryl Streep.
It's going to get Oscars.
I would watch it.
This is not a Writing Shit Down podcast. Welcome to Season 6, Episode 20 of Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs
Like us.
decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is.
Who framed Roger Travitt, aka JoJo Travitt?
Nice. And I'm joined, as always, here, not in the shop, by my co-host and co-producer, Little Peter Cot Shontail. AKA Ali Sean Wonderland.
Okay.
In addition, we are extremely excited to welcome to the show Easter Egg Chell, AKA Chelsea Darko, AKA, this is a nice one, Chelsea Easter Bunny. Further description of the show, the tagline at the top says, Watch, Chop, Retrofit, because essentially that's what we're doing here. We're watching older movies. Sometimes they're classic films with iconic actors, sometimes not. And then we retrofit them by tweaking the design with new parts. Quick disclaimer, we're not actually in favor of remakes, reboots, and sequels. This is more of an exercise in satire and irony. We try to be funny.
And sometimes we succeed.
That's true. So I've got a question for you guys, and I'm changing it up a little bit from last week and previous weeks. Previously, we had asked, can you point out an example of a good remake? We kind of ran out of juice on that because there's just not very many examples of good remakes. So instead, we're going to say, can you point out an example of a bad or unnecessary remake?
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, you mean Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
Whichever one is
Johnny Depp.
the Johnny Depp version, very unnecessary.
Good. All right. And Chelsea?
Fame. The 2009 remake was terrible.
Now, wasn't the 2009 one made for TV?
No.
It
Okay.
had a theatrical release?
I'm pretty sure it did.
Huh.
All right, well, my example is the 2005 version of Bad News Bears is better, sorry, worse than the 1976 film The Bad News Bears. So the original had Walter Matthau, and it was kind of cutting edge for the time to have kids and adolescents swearing and drinking.
And drinking beer.
And then they remade it in 2005 with Billy Bob Thornton, and it was just old hat. Next, we're going to move into our first mini segment, which is going to be movie news. And unfortunately, this week we've got one, two, three, four RIPs to mention. So rest in peace and rest in power to the following people. The first one is Honor Blackman, who is dead at the age of 94. I did read that it was natural causes for her. James Bond's Pussy Galore. She also was in The Avengers, but not the movie, the TV show The Avengers. Then we also have George Ogilvy. He was the co-director of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. He died at the age of 89. And what was your comment on this, Sean?
Yeah, Mad Max Thunderdome. Two men entered, one man left.
Next, we've got James Dury. He was the star of the Western series The Virginian. He died at the age of 85. And then Alan Garfield, who was on the TV show Nashville, I believe the original iteration. He was also in the movie The Conversation, died at the age of 80 from coronavirus. So rest in peace and rest in power to all of them. Next up, this is one that you sent to me about Tyler Perry, Sean. Why don't you read this one?
Oh, yeah, that's some good news about the coronavirus, or as good as it gets.
Yes.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Tyler Perry basically paid for the groceries of senior citizens during, I guess they call it happy hour or senior citizen hour, area Kroger's in Atlanta and area Winn-Dixie's in New Orleans.
So 44 Kroger's in Atlanta and 29 Winn-Dixie's in New Orleans.
Yeah, good on him.
It is good on him, but I'm wondering how he decided which franchise to choose in which city and why New Orleans got the short end of the stick.
I think it was probably just population and number of stores in those areas.
I was trying to start some beef with Tyler Perry.
I don't think you can start beef with him doing something nice like that.
And that's going to lead us to have a Tyler Perry episode, right?
Yeah, I've been pushing for one for a while. As much as I don't want to watch any of his films, I think that we owe it to him to give him the treatment.
After disco movies.
And you're going to have to remind me about these suggested themes because you mention them sometimes. And sometimes I'm very like coherent and I remember. And other times they just go in one ear and right out the other. Next, we've got police in Louisiana apologize after using the purge siren for COVID-19 curfew warning. All right, so I could see how that would be pretty, pretty stressful, especially if you'd seen the films.
Yeah.
Speaking of seeing things in films, the VFX editor from the film version of Cats confirms that the quote-unquote butthole cut was real and very terrible. Any thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we all knew this was a thing because the roommate of the editor whose job was to put digital buttholes on the cats said, yeah, my roommate put buttholes on the cats and that was his job. And somebody said, we should take those buttholes off the cats.
Well, it is very true to life, because if there's one thing that cats love, it's showing you their butthole.
And licking them.
Ew.
Next up, Bong Hive Assemble, Parasite, and three other Bong Joon-ho films are now streaming on Hulu. Next, Hellraiser and Salem's Lot have found their directors. What's the deal with this?
Apparently somebody thought it'd be a good idea to remake these films, and they've got their directors. Bruckner is the last name of the director of the Hellraiser film, and Gary Dauberman, he was the writer on It, and he directed Chelsea's favorite movie, Annabelle Comes Home.
Ew.
A.K.A.
Finger painting with Annabelle.
I can't believe you don't like the Daubs. The Dauber. All right, with that, we're going to move into our next segment. I'm looking to see what it is. Oh, well, there's the phone ringing. So that must mean that it's time for the Department of Corrections Department with Chief Corrections Officer Dana.
Greetings, Choppers. You know, when Bette Davis first came to Hollywood, Universal wanted her to change her name to Bettina Dawes. But she refused because she said it sounded like Between the Draws. Giggity. Adam Schlesinger was not the front man for Fountains of Wayne. That was Chris Collingwood. The setting of Jezebel was New Orleans. Chelsea, I'm afraid I'm going to have to send you to solitary for not even reading the summary of Dangerous. That'll give you time to find the movie and watch it, unless you want to fork out $4 to watch it on Amazon Prime. In the words of Miss Davis, if everybody likes you, you're pretty dull. See you next week.
All right. Thank you, Dana. I also refuse to change my name from Who Framed Roger Travitt. I'm also changing my prison ID card to reflect that. And that will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department for this week, which brings us to the theme of the episode. Am I correct?
Yes.
In celebration of the Easter holiday, this episode should come out, or as we say, go kerplunk on Easter Sunday. We're talking about, of course, in the most spiritual of ways, rabbit movies. How do you guys feel about that?
It was a weird pick, man.
It was very weird.
So it is weird to associate the holiday of Easter, celebrating the resurrection of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, with eggs and a rabbit. So in honor of that, I've prepared a quick musical interlude, but I need you to be in the right mindset, okay?
Okay.
Imagine that you're in like an underground club in the late 80s, and you're there to see a metal show.
Okay.
And so I got to drink a little bit of water before I do this because it tears up my throat.
Oh God, you're going to sing?
Yeah. This is called Heavy Metal Easter.
Jigga 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 jigga. He's a little rabbit, yeah, and he's got a habit, yeah. Jigga 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 jigga. He's hiding eggs for you. He's hiding eggs for me. Rabbits don't lay eggs. How can this be? Jigga 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 jigga. He's the Easter Bunny, yeah. The fucking Easter Bunny, yeah. Jigga 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 jigga.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm crying.
Did you like it?
Yes. Loved it.
So that means it's time for our next segment, which is going to be the Midnight Double Feature. And that's where we go around the panel and we each talk about two movies that are within the theme of the episode. This week, being rabbit movies. And Chelsea, as our guest, would you like to go first?
If she can compose herself.
I cannot.
I'm gonna go first since Chelsea's losing her shit. All right, so I paired two films that feature authors as the subject matter who featured rabbits heavily in their works. I'm starting out with the newer of the two. It's from 2006. It is Miss Potter, starring Renee Zellweger and Ewan McGregor. It's the story of Beatrix Potter, the author of the beloved best-selling children's book, The Tale of Peter Rabbit, and her struggle for love, happiness, and success. And sweet movie. I really like this, even though I don't particularly care for Renee Zellweger. I thought that the story was really nice. I learned some things about Beatrix Potter I did not know, including her philanthropy of purchasing up all this pastoral land in the United Kingdom and letting other people buy it after her death through a land trust. So able to keep it off the hands of developers and keep farmlands kind of where they belong. So really cool story, nice semi-tragic love story as well. Yeah, I'm pairing that with 1985's Dream Child. And this is the story of the real life subject matter of Alice in Wonderland, Alice Little Hargreaves, and her relationship with Lewis Carroll. And this one's a darker film. Ian Holm plays Lewis Carroll, and Peter Gallagher, young Peter Gallagher, plays a reporter turned agent for Alice Hargreaves as she makes her tour of the United States and on the anniversary, I think, of Lewis Carroll's birth or his publishing of the book. But she is haunted by her memories of the characters, and there's some really dark interpretations through puppetry and animatronics of some of the characters from the Alice books, including the March Hare, which ties it into our rabbit movies episode. Neat movie. I recommend watching it. Just if you like really dark subject matter, especially the strange relationship between Lewis Carroll and the young Alice Little, who incidentally he completely lost interest in after she hit puberty.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. That's in high school, I did a report on him. I had to read like his biography, and really strange guy. He had an obsession with her, but by all accounts was purely platonic.
Okay, cool.
Now, Chelsea, are you ready?
Yeah, I've got it together now. My double feature also has author as the tie-in. I did 1978's Watership Down.
Okay.
And 1982's The Plague Dogs, which they were both written by Richard Adams, and the movie adaptations were both Martin Rosen as the director. And both of these are pretty dark subject matter as well. Yeah. Obviously, Watership Down is about bunnies that are escaping because one of them has a vision that something terrible is going to happen, and it's pretty violent and grim. And the animation in this one is really, it's really interesting. It's kind of stylized, but I think they get it. They do a better job in Plague Dogs. It's a little bit more refined.
Okay.
And Plague Dogs, this movie, oh my God, is gut-wrenching. It's about two dogs that escape from a laboratory that does experiments on them. And they meet up with this fox who is like, hey, if you share your food with me, I'll help you survive out in the world. And they're like, okay. And it's just them kind of trying to have a better life, and everything just goes terribly wrong. It's very sad, but I recommend watching them both.
Oh, you know, speaking of sad, you know what I just thought of?
What?
That Of Mice and Men is a rabbit movie.
Oh, it is?
Oh, yes.
All right. On a lighter note, my midnight double feature is also utilizing animation. It is a midnight double feature including 1988's Who Framed Roger Rabbit, that was directed by Robert Zemeckis, who's well known for his visual flourishing style. He directed Romancing the Stone, Back to the Future 1, 2, and 3, also Forrest Gump, and the recent Welcome to Marwen. So if you haven't seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit, I recommend it. It is an excellent animated comedy that serves on multiple levels. It's good for children, it's good for adults. We've got Bob Hoskins, who is a down on his luck private investigator, and he gets hired by this producer, director, cartoon guy named R.K. Maroon. And he's supposed to be investigating an adultery scandal involving Jessica Rabbit, who is the wife of the biggest star at the time, Roger Rabbit. And whenever the Marvin Acme guy is found dead, that's when shit really hits the fan and he realizes it's a situation of life and death. How do you guys feel about Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
It's a hair-raising tale.
Oh, we can't forget Christopher Lloyd's villain in this.
Yeah, he was quite good.
All right, so the next one that I'm going to pair with that is by far an inferior film, but it does combine the live action and animation, as well as a lot of the Looney Tunes characters that you know and love, and it is called Space Jam. And I don't have the correct year here, but I think we're talking, 2000
Oh, no. Way earlier than that. I saw this in the theater.
96?
That 96 sounds more accurate.
Yeah.
All right. So, Chelsea, you check on it while I describe it. It's not from 1955. It has a 43 on Rotten Tomatoes, which is probably generous. We've got this alien resort owner named Swackhammer, played by Danny DeVito, and he owns this theme park called Moron Mountain, and it's declining in popularity, so he needs to do something to get the traffic up, and he decides that he will kidnap the Looney Tunes and enslave them in a stand-up comedy venue in the resort. And so Bugs challenges the little aliens that come down to Earth. They're known as the Nerdlucks. He challenges them to a game of basketball to determine their fate. And the aliens agree, but then they go and steal the powers of actual NBA players like Larry Bird and Charles Barkley. Muggsy Bogues is in the mix. So Bugs gets some help from superstar Michael Jordan.
It's from 1996.
96, okay. And at your recommendation, Sean, I did go and listen to our peers' podcast, How Did This Get Made?, the episode about Space Jam, and it was hilarious.
Yeah, they did a great job.
So yeah, that's going to be my double feature. Two live-action combos with animation featuring some beloved animated characters. All right, so we're going to move it along to our feature segment, which is the recast. And this is where we take a film that is within our category, this week being rabbit movies, and then we hypothetically recast a few of the main roles with contemporary actors. All right, so the first film, I know that you're excited about this, Sean. It's called Night of the Lepus.
Yes.
AKA Rabbits from 1972. It's got an 8% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's too much.
It was directed by William F. Claxton, who also directed Young and Dangerous, God is My Partner, Rockabilly Baby, Desire in the Dust, and Law of the Lawless.
Wow.
So, Sean, tell us about this movie. What is going on the Night of the Lepus?
I can summarize this in one sentence. Giant mutant rabbits terrorize the Southwest.
That's true. That's exactly what happens. I have to say that I'm going to give a shout out here to my neighbor from down the street. His name's Robert. He's a older gentleman, and he actually recommended this movie to me a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago, and I did not know what I was in for. All right, so we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 roles that we're going to recast. First, we've got Roy Bennett, who's played by Stuart Whitman. And did you say that he just passed away?
Yeah, March 16th.
And do we know how?
Skin cancer. Complications with it.
Bummer. Use sunscreen. Then we've got Jerry Bennett, G-E-R-R-Y, because she's a girl, played by Janet Leigh. And then we've got Cole Hillman, played by Rory Calhoun. Excuse me, what's his full name, Sean?
Rory Motel Hell Calhoun.
And then finally, we've got Elgin Clark, played by DeForest Kelly.
Famously known as Dr. Bones McCoy.
Dr. Bones McCoy. All right, so let's start with Roy Bennett, played by Stuart Whitman. He was in Those Magnificent Men in Their Flying Machines. He was also in The Mark, and he was in a movie called The Comanche with John Wayne. And Stuart Whitman was 44 at the time. Chelsea, who's going to be your Roy Bennett?
This movie made me angry to watch it. I walked away from any scenes because I didn't feel like it deserved my attention. And recasting it just made my blood boil. And so I picked people that most of us don't like, because I'm not going to do that to, like, nice, real actors. So these are all pieces of shit.
Chelsea likes her rabbit very salty.
Yeah. So my actor is an arrogant asshole. He was in the movie The Town, Million Dollar Arm, Baby Driver. Most people would know him from the TV show Mad Men. I went with John Hamm.
You don't like John Hamm?
What an arrogant prick.
You know, I know a lot of people who share that opinion.
Because it's fucking true. Watch an interview.
I think he's a fine actor.
He's a dick.
I have nothing against the man. Sean, who's your pick?
This actor's been on my mind for a few, since last week, actually. If you listen to last week's episode, I brought him up. Everybody in this film looked 10 years older than they actually were. I think it was probably because they all smoked. Heavy smokers. They just all had that weathered look about them. So yeah. I went a little older with my entire cast. This actor is 54 now. He was in Argo. He was in Super 8, Manchester by the Sea. But most people know him from his television series, Friday Night Lights. I went with Kyle Chandler.
Kyle Chandler. You've used him before recently, haven't you?
No, I just brought him up last week.
Okay.
I just said that the guy in one of the films last week looked just like him.
Reminded you of him, yes.
Yeah.
It was in Dead Ringers. It was the Tony.
Yeah, the boyfriend.
The boyfriend, yes.
The prize boyfriend. All right, my actor is 43 now, and he was in Seven Psychopaths. He was also in The Recruit. He was in a couple of films by Yorgos Lanthimos. He was in The Killing of a Sacred Deer and The Lobster. He was in season 2 of True Detective, and he's going to be the Penguin in the upcoming Batman. I went with Colin Farrell.
Yeah, speaking of actors we don't like.
I like him. And I like him a lot for this role. I think he's got just enough, like, greasy disheveledness. Next, we've got the role of Jerry Bennett. And who is she in relationship to Roy Bennett?
I think they're husband and wife.
Okay. And she was played by Janet Leigh, who, of course, we know from Psycho and Touch of Evil. She was also in The Manchurian Candidate, and she was in the 1949 version of Little Women. She's also the mother of Jamie Lee Curtis, and she was married to Jamie Lee's father, Tony Curtis. Janet Leigh was 45 at the time. Chelsea?
My actress is 30. She's also a piece of shit who can't act, so she's perfect for this.
Throw it down.
I had Sean ask Dana who her least favorite actress is, and I had already picked her, so we were on the same wavelength.
Wow.
I'm hoping she might let me out of solitary for a little bit. I went with Kristen Stewart.
Oh, okay. You're going to go out of the hole and underwater.
Pretty much.
All right, Sean, who's your pick?
All right, my actress is 53 years old. She was in Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
Yes.
She was in This Is Where I Leave You. She was in American Ultra. And people will know her from her part also in Friday Night Lights. I went with Connie Britton.
Right on. Okay, so that's good. You paired her with Kyle Chandler. Kyle Chandler.
Reuniting them.
Very nice.
For this awesome, awesome film.
Oh, God.
All right, well, my actress is also 45, and she's mostly known for television shows. She got her start on the soap opera Passions. She was also in the TV show Californication, and she had a leading role in the TV show Justified. And she's currently, if not recently, on a very funny show called The Detour. Her name is Natalie Zay. Natalie Zay. Next up, we've got Cole Hillman, who was played by Rory Calhoun, Rory Motel Hell Calhoun. he was also in some other movies. He was in a movie called Four Guns to the Border and River of No Return. And Rory Calhoun was 55 at the time that he played Cole Hillman. Chelsea, is there somebody else that you can't stand?
Oh, yeah. And this just happened today. This was the whole reason that I thought to do this, because I was sitting down to do this recast. I read this tweet and I went, what a piece of shit. And there was my theme. I went with Dennis Quaid. He tweeted yesterday that Donald Trump is doing a good job with his coronavirus response. And I went, wow.
I disagree.
The same.
My lovely wife, Michelle.
Drink.
Has been sewing masks. Like homemade masks.
Yeah.
And she's doing a really good job at it. All right. So, Sean, you're Cole Hillman?
Okay. I went with an actor who is 59 years old. And he seems like the kind of guy who would be an outdoorsy type. He's done a few outdoorsy roles. He was in My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Hmm.
He was in Serendipity. He was also in the To All the Boys movies. But everyone knows him as the DJ Chris on Northern Exposure, John Corbett.
All right. Well, my actor is 49 now. He was in An American Werewolf in Paris. He was in, speaking of, That Thing You Do.
Oh, I love that movie.
He was also in not Boilermaker, but Boiler Room. And he was in Dead Man on Campus. His name is Thomas Everett Scott.
Cool.
Okay.
Incidentally, I very often, until recently, confused him with the kid who was the young Josh Baskins in Big.
Oh, wow.
But that's actually a different actor named David Moscow. Next up, we've got Bones. His name wasn't that in this. It was Elgin Bones Clark, and he was played by DeForest Kelly. And DeForest Kelly was known to his colleagues as D-E-E. That was his nickname. American actor, screenwriter, poet, and singer, known for his roles in Westerns and, of course, as Dr. Leonard Bones McCoy of the USS Enterprise in the television and film series Star Trek. And he was 52 at the time that he played Elgin Clark. Chelsea, go.
Sean, this one's for you.
Thanks.
My actor was in Independence Day and Spaceballs. I went with Bill Pullman.
Oh, you're pulling my leg, man. All right, cool. Sean?
All right, my actor is 62 years old. Mm-hmm. Let me go with some of his newer roles that you might not know him from. He was in the TV series City on a Hill. He was in a short film called Duck. And a TV series called I Love Dick. But he knows a thing or two about animals that burrow under the earth, as we found out in Tremors. It's Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon.
That's great.
Nice. He's only six degrees away from actually doing this movie.
You know, Kevin Bacon has rocked a mustache like DeForest Kelly did in this film. So that too plays a part.
I'm glad that you brought up the mustache, because DeForest Kelly's mustache was quite prominent in this movie. My actor is 49 now. He was in The Founder. He's also in a really good indie movie called Hearts Beat Loud. He is Axe Cop. And of course, he's Ron Swanson on Parks and Recreation. I went with Nick Offerman.
Very, very nice.
The man knows how to rock a mustache.
He does, but he's too good for this.
So, final thoughts on Night of the Lepus.
Don't. Don't waste your time.
But what if you have all the time in the world?
Absolutely not.
Nope.
All right, we're going to have to agree to disagree on that one. And with that, we're going to go ahead and head into intermission, but not before we say,
let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby
and get ourselves some Easter eggs.
And rabbit stew.
And carrot cake.
All right, Chop Shoppers, thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis, and I just have one question for you, Sean. What is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under reviewed.
Like make it a whole pyramid scheme. Get the people under them to do it. And multiply.
A Podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes. You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show. Don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
All right. Welcome back, Chop Shoppers. Thank you guys for bearing with us during intermission. I had to go and boil some eggs. And when we come back from intermission, what do we like to do, Sean?
Beer check-ins.
And what are you drinking this week?
I'm drinking an on-theme beer.
Tell me about it.
I'm drinking Pixels by Seminar Brewing.
And it is on-theme because...
It's hoppy.
Oh, I love it. Also, I love it so much that I'm also drinking Pixels from Seminar Brewing. That's seminarbrewing.com.
Very nice.
So while we're enjoying those delicious beers, we're going to talk about our 2020 movie marathon. And this is where... Sean and I and whoever else would like to participate. Chelsea, are you participating?
Yeah, I've made a lot of progress this week.
Excellent. We watch as many movies as we can throughout the calendar year. And this calendar year is a leap year. So it's 366 movies is the kind of end game goal. But people like Sean can feel free to go well above and beyond. And so today is the 101st day of the year, and I am on number 134.
Yes, and I am on 131.
All right, so I'm still ahead of you.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
And so it's a victory lap would be like one time around, but I was ahead of you last week and this week.
Oh, you're going to continue to stay ahead of me until work calls you back indoors.
Right. Chelsea, what number are you on?
75.
Wow.
I know. I told you.
That is some serious progress. So, Chelsea, go ahead and give us your first check-in for this week.
Sean told me about this glorious movie called Thank God It's Friday. And then we went on this like deep dive of disco movies and came across this magnificent little gem called Skate Town USA.
Oh.
It has Scott Baio. And in the opening credits, it says introducing Patrick Swayze.
Whoa.
And it is glorious. I am forever changed.
He plays the leader of a roller skating gang, and his name is Ace. You don't even have to watch the whole movie. You can look up Patrick Swayze's routines on YouTube.
Oh,
just look up
great.
Look up Patrick Swayze, Skate Town USA. He has a solo skating routine and a duo skating routine, both of which he uses as a belt.
All right, Sean, what's your next or your first check-in for this week?
All right, so it's kind of on theme this week. It's The Art of Playboy, The Man Behind the Bunny, This is a documentary about Art Paul, the first art director of Playboy magazine, who was instrumental in the look and feel of the magazine outside the realm of the nudes and what have you.
Right.
This is more about the layout of the typography, the recruiting of various artists, and he was really instrumental for about 35 years of steering the overall look of that magazine.
All right. Well, last week I mentioned the Indie Grits live stream. The Indie Grits Film Festival did a live stream pop-up of a bunch of the films that would have been screened at that film festival. And I did get the chance to watch one of them before it ended on, I think, the 5th. It was called Mossville, When Great Trees Fall. And it was a documentary. It was a really sad documentary about a rural town, I believe in the South. And it's a tragic documentary about people being driven from their homes by petrochemical companies. It takes place in this town that was a historically Black community. And these chemical companies, first one and then others, come to town because the land is cheap, and they're basically driving all of the residents out. And one guy decides not to leave. And this factory development and construction is happening all around his house and yard. And they cut off his power. They cut off his water. It was really sad. But it was a really kind of like a harrowing last man standing kind of situation.
It is the first anniversary of the Criterion Channel. And the first collection they released in their very first month of being in existence was the Columbia Noir. These are the film noirs of Columbia Pictures. They've come back again this year with even more from them to choose from. And I watched one called Blind Alley from 1939. Held hostage in his home with his family and friends, a psychology professor uses the principles of psychotherapy to dismantle the murderous leader of their gang of captors.
So how did your lovely wife feel about the title of this film?
Well, she's legally blind without her glasses, so I think she's okay with it.
Chelsea, do you have a check-in?
I do. It's a documentary, and it's called Tell Me Who I Am. And it's about identical twin brothers, and one of them, when they're 18, has a motorcycle accident, uh-huh. and he hits his head and loses all of his memory. He knows who his brother is. He doesn't know who anybody else is. And his brother is kind of recreating, or like helping him put the dots together to his life through photograph, and come to find out that there's a big, terrible,
secret.
Dark secret, and it takes about 20 years for the brother to finally confess what had happened to them as children. And it's just heartbreaking.
Okay, well, the next one I'm going to do is going to be number 125. And it's called Second City, The First Family of Comedy.
Nice.
And it was an awesome documentary. I do have to be honest, though. Technically, it would be considered a miniseries because it was in three parts with three different hosts. But that just made it a 160-minute movie or something like that. So I watched it all in a row, and I'm counting it as a movie. Documentary on the history of one of the most influential sketch comedy / improv troupes in their relatively short-lived TV show. What's your next one?
I will check in one that was in my queue for a while. This is called Lake Artifact from 2019. And it is a time and space ripple effect kind of movie. Time and space folds onto itself as friends begin to turn on each other in a cabin home in the woods on a vacation.
Yeah.
Genesee Beard never had so much screen time. There's a hiker in the woods who has a case of Genesee beer. And he's like approaches the guy and goes, "You guys want a beer?" And so they all start drinking the beer. And then later on in the cabin, they're all drinking Genesee beer. But I noticed that it went from Genesee Cream Ale to Genesee Light. And I'm wondering if it's like the beer nerd in me that picked up on the subtle change in the labels, or is it overlapping realities where he bought Cream Ale in one reality and Light in the other? I learned that Alexandra Daddario has a sister named Catherine who is now an actress as well. So
My last one is another documentary. It's called Issac, and it's about my favorite violinist, Issac Perlman. And it's just kind of about his life and his journey, how he became a star.
Also, I really like how it delves into the part of his life where he was raising his daughter, Rhea Perlman, and how he prepared her to go on to play Carla on Cheers.
not the same thing.
I mean, being married to Danny DeVito is no small feat. My next check-in is going to be Lazy Susan, number 123. It's a 2020 movie in which Sean Hayes unflinchingly portrays Susan, a middle-aged, unemployed mooch. Ever searching for love, it might be right around the corner. As we started watching this, I was wondering if they were ever going to reference the fact that it was a man playing a female character. And maybe they were going to work that into the plot. Maybe she was trans, or maybe she, whatever. They did not.
And for that reason, I have an issue with this film.
What was that, Sean?
There are not enough roles for women to play in Hollywood as it is. Why put Sean Hayes in this part if you're not going to make it a trans role? What was the point of him being in that part when that part could have gone to a woman?
True. I mean, He is openly gay, right?
Sure, but that doesn't entitle him to a woman's part in a film.
Good call.
However, I did like to, I was glad to see Jim Rash on camera again.
Yeah.
I know he's been doing a lot of writing lately, so I'm just excited to see him on camera whenever possible.
I did want to mention one more. Speaking of disco, I watched a documentary called Studio 54. It's on Netflix. It was my check-in 134. It's an in-depth documentary that you wished you would have watched instead of the 1998 Ryan Phillippe, Mike Myers joint.
I'm telling you, we got to do a disco episode.
It's happening.
We got to go ahead and move it along to the second part of our feature segment. It's the recast continued.
Part two.
The sequel.
The resurrection.
Hop Along Edition. The movie that we're going to recast is a classic film. I think that it's pretty much unanimously recommended. It's from 1950. It's called Harvey. And it was directed by Henry Coaster, or Coster. It's got an 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. He also directed movies like Inspector General, 100 Men and a Girl, gross, and Three Smart Girls, not as gross. We've got a situation where we've got this heavy drinking man who has a imaginary friend or a hallucination. What's going on?
His imaginary friend is a 6'3" tall rabbit named Harvey. Well, his sister is trying relentlessly to have him committed because he's obviously crazy.
His much and older sister.
Much older sister by 31 years on the film. But she's trying to get him committed, and he's so charming and so easygoing that temporarily even his sister is the one who's committed. He's out roaming the streets, and they finally get him back in to the sanitarium, and he's just... You just can't help but like the guy to the point where everybody kind of moves over to his side. And even by the end of the film, you're questioning, is Harvey real or not?
He's very affable.
He is very affable. We should also mention that the film was written by Mary Chase, who was the playwright of the original, the Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Harvey.
Also, I want to mention that they reference the film in Who Framed Roger Rabbit when they're in the bar, and the judge, Judge Doom, is about to try to coerce somebody into snitching on Roger. The guy says, yeah, I seen a rabbit. He's right here. Say hello, Harvey. We've got Elwood P. Dowd, played by Jimmy Stewart, who was 42 at the time. We've got Veda Lewis Dowd Simpson, Veda Louise Dowd Simpson, who is the older sister, played by Josephine Hull. She was 72 at the time. We've got Miss Kelly, or Nurse Kelly, played by Peggy Dow. She was 22, and she's the love interest, correct?
She's the love interest of Dr. Sanderson, who you're about to mention.
Dr. Lyman Sanderson, who was played by Charles Drake, and he was 33 at the time. Then finally, we've got another doctor. We've got Dr. William Chumley, not to be confused with the disgraced member of Pawn Stars.
Wow. Deep dive.
He was played by Cecil Kellaway, who was 60 at the time. All right, so let's start with the first one. We've got Elwood P. Dowd, played by Jimmy Stewart, who was 42. And Chelsea, how do you feel?
So I have a theme, and my theme is not hatred this time. So my first actor, he was in Hairspray, X-Men, 27 Dresses, and the Sonic movie. I went with James Marsden.
Nice. I like it. I can see him as kind of like the everyman, the likable guy. All right, Sean, who's your pick?
All right, I have a theme too, and I want to see if you can guess my theme. My actor is 50 years old. He was in the Grand Budapest Hotel. He was in Primal Fear. He was in Birdman. He was in American History X, as well as Fight Club. It's Edward Norton.
I like it. I'm curious about your theme. I did want to mention also about this film that the first time I saw this was with my grandmother, my adopted father's mother. And she was in a nursing home at the time, and I was staying with her for whatever reason for the weekend. Maybe it was just a visit. Maybe my parents wanted to get rid of me. Not sure. But, you know, they do a lot of activities at nursing homes, at least nicer ones. And one of the activities was movie night. And we watched the movie Harvey at what was at the time a big screen TV down in like the rec center of the nursing home. And that was the first time that I ever saw this film. So I have kind of fond memories of it in that regard. So my Elwood P. Dowd is 41 now. He has to be likable. He has to be genuine. And you have to believe that he believes it, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So my actor, one of his first film roles was as a police officer in the movie Superbad. He was also one half of the titular twins in the movie Skeleton Twins. He was in It Chapter 2, and he was a regular on SNL. His name is Bill Hader.
Love it.
Bill Hader. Can you see him just referring to his six-foot rabbit friend in the room?
Well, and Bill Hader, of course, is such a fan of old movies anyway.
Right.
If you were to do this as a period piece, he would be.
You have to do it in black and white.
Yes.
This movie reminded me a lot of that Peter Sellers one, Being There.
Yeah.
Like that, the main character.
So likable.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a really good observation. All right. Next up, we've got his much older sister. She was 73 at the time, to his 42. And the actress is Josephine Hull. She's also known for roles in Arsenic and Old Lace, The Lady from Texas, and After Tomorrow. And Chelsea, who did you pick for Veda Louise Dowd Simmons?
So I don't have quite the same age difference because I needed her to fit my theme. But this actress was in The Matrix Reloaded, Matrix Revolutions, some movie called Brotherhood of the Wolf. I probably am going to butcher her name. Monica Bellucci?
Oh, yeah. Monica Bellucci is great.
Monica Bellucci is an amazing actress. I'm wondering how in the hell she can relate to James Marsden. All right, Sean.
All right, so I brought her age a little bit more down into reality. She's 55 years old. She's been in films such as My Week with Marilyn, Sabrina, Legends of the Fall, and The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. It's Julia Ormond.
I love her. Interesting. Some people might confuse Julia Ormond with Monica Bellucci.
Well, one's English and one's Italian.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. I get confused very easily.
We know.
My actress, and I don't really have a theme. My actress is 72 now. She is Australian. She emerged in the 1970s as a symbol of the Australian New Wave through her work in so-called Ozploitation movies. That's O-Z-ploitation. Such as Stork, Alvin Purple, and Peterson. Other films include Picnic at Hanging Rock, and later Silver Linings Playbook, The Disaster Artist, and Bird Box. Her name is Jackie Weaver. Did you guys enjoy my mini movie of my picks last week?
Absolutely.
I'm going to try to do it again, but I need to figure out a better way to put music with the WMA or whatever the saving format is. All right, next up, we've got Nurse Kelly. Nurse Kelly was 22 at the time, and she was played by Peggy Dow. Peggy Dow was in other films like Bright Victory, You Never Can Tell, and Undertow. And Chelsea, who was your pick for her?
My actress was in Bridesmaids, Neighbors, Peter Rabbit, Insidious, and Spy. I went with Rose Byrne.
She was in a rabbit movie?
She was indeed in a rabbit movie.
Oh, wait a minute. I smell your theme.
Rose Byrne, Monica Bellucci, and James Marsden. All right, I feel you. All right, next up, Sean.
All right, my actress was in Coraline. Yeah. Man on Fire, I Am Sam, War of the Worlds, The Alienist, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's Dakota Fanning.
I love Dakota Fanning. I think she's great. I think that our friend and friend of seminar, friend of the show, Dana, not Chief Corrections Officer Dana, but our other friend Dana, yes, reminds me a little bit of Elle Fanning. And I've told her that. It's not weird. A little bit reminds me of Betty Gilpin.
I can see that more than one of the Fanning sisters.
I didn't do mine. My actress is 21 now. She was in Manchester by the Sea. She was in Us. She was in Moonrise Kingdom. And she's in an upcoming movie called Drunk Bus, which I'm already on. Her name is Kara Hayward. Kara Hayward. She was the girl in Moonrise Kingdom, the main girl.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of looks like a young Lana Del Rey. All right, so now we can move it to Dr. Lyman Sanderson, or Raymond, however you want to call it. He was played by Charles Drake, who is also in No Name on the Bullet, To Hell and Back, and It Came from Outer Space. And he was 33 at the time. Chelsea, who is your Dr. Lyman?
So my actor was in American Pie, Election, Just Friends. I went with Chris Klein.
Chris Pine.
Klein.
It's pronounced pine, like the tree.
No, sweetheart. It's Klein.
Who the hell is Chris Klein?
Watch Election.
I've seen Election. It's Matthew Broderick and Reese Witherspoon.
And Chris Klein. Klein.
Is he related to Kevin Klein?
He was in American Pie. Right. He was the really doe-eyed, dopey guy.
He plays Oz in American Pie.
Sounds like some Ozploitation to me.
Oh, gosh.
Lord.
You would know him if you saw him.
So, Sean, who's going to be your Dr. Lyman Sanderson?
All right. Moving on. My actor is 36 years old. He was in Twilight Saga Eclipse.
Ew.
He was in Love and Friendship. He was in Adore. And he was in Fury. His name is Xavier Samuel.
Okay. My actor is 32 now. He was in 17 Again. He was in It's Complicated. He was in Still Alice. But most people would recognize him as Silas Botwin on the TV program Weeds. I went with Hunter Parrish.
Okay, I got you.
And finally, we've got the role of Dr. William Chum Lee, and he was played by Cecil Kellaway, who was also in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, The Postman Always Rings Twice, the original one from 1946, and The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. Chelsea, do you have a pick for this one?
I do. My actor was in a Mortal Kombat, Resurrection, Subway. I went with Christopher Lambert.
Christopher Lambert. So did you just pick people that we've talked about recently?
No, I did not.
What was your theme?
Everybody was in like Easter-themed movies.
Easter-themed movies.
Easter-themed movie was James Marsden in?
Hop.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say Sonic the Hedgehog.
No.
If they would have incorporated an Easter theme to that, they would have made bank.
Probably.
What's next?
My pick.
Do it.
He is 65 years old. He was in The Guard, Calvary.
Oh, yeah.
In Bruges.
Yes.
Cold Mountain. And Troy. His name is Brendan Gleeson.
Brendan Gleeson. No relation to Jackie Gleeson.
No. Now, can you guess my theme?
People who have worked with Colin Farrell.
No. People who have worked with my pick for the role of Harvey.
Oh, who's that?
Tyler Durden.
Whoa! That is awesome, dude. You just blew my fucking mind.
Everyone's worked with Brad Pitt.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, the Edward Norton pick was, I was like, I'm picturing like a really dark, gritty, late 90s version of Harvey.
Well, in a way, they are kind of analogous.
Yes, they are.
All right, well, my actor is 60 now, as was Cecil Kellaway. He was in Flatliners. He was in The Three Musketeers. He was in A Time to Kill and Lake Placid. I went with Oliver Platt.
Good pick.
Oliver Platt. So, final thoughts on Harvey.
It's a great, great movie. Joey Poole says it's one of his favorites.
It's solid recommend.
Yeah, solid recommend. And it plays out just like a play. You can actually, I'm surprised this movie didn't have the curtain call bows from all the couples in the film.
Chelsea?
Like I said, it's so good.
Drink.
Everyone should watch it. It's amazing. I loved it.
Very good. Okay, so yeah, solid recommend from me as well. And that brings us to our bonus segment, which again this week is going to be a battle royale. I'm just feeling kind of bloodthirsty. So it is going to be a battle royale between the Easter Bunny, the Playboy Bunny, and the Energizer Bunny. What do you guys think?
Oh, I've got my dark horse that's going to enter the field of battle.
Okay. Chelsea?
The Bunny from Donnie Darko.
You guys are picking things that aren't options.
It's a write-in. It counts. Okay.
You're calling an audible. All right, Sean, who's your pick?
I'm picking the Killer Rabbit of Carbanog.
He's got little fangs.
Need a big pointy teeth to go.
All right, well, I'm going with the Energizer Bunny, which it's a corporate mascot, but it is also a symbol of our youth. You don't see the Energizer Bunny in commercials anymore. For a little while, there was a screensaver. There was an Energizer Bunny screensaver. But I feel like he's kind of akin to the Noid or the Hamburglar. Things
Chester,
like that.
Chester Cheetah.
Yeah, characters, if corporate shills, but still characters from a bygone era. With that, we're going to wrap it up. I want to thank you, Chelsea, for being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
Anything you would like to plug this week?
You know, social distancing, washing your hands, same yes. old, same old.
All right. And also, thank you to you, Sean, my co-host, co-producer, and the engineer of this little program. And anything you want to plug this week?
Got to keep plugging that curbside pickup at Seminar Brewing for anybody in the area. We appreciate all your pennies.
We do need the support right now, even though, you know, stay at home as much as possible. But if you're going to be drinking beer and you would like good beer, support Seminar Brewing, because it's a tough time for everybody right now. Also, Sean, do you know what next week's episode is?
We're doing the films of Jane Mansfield.
That's right. The films of Jane Mansfield. It's in celebration of the 87th date of her birth on April 19th. And not only was she a pinup, a blonde bombshell, an actress, and a rival to Marilyn Monroe. There was a lot of talk about that. But there was also frequent references made to her very high IQ, which she claimed was 163. And she was also a polyglot. In addition to English, she spoke four other languages. Your question is, what were those four other languages that Jane Mansfield spoke?
Spanish, German, Italian, Mandarin.
Oh, you were so close. It's French, Spanish, German, and Italian. And I would be remiss if I did not mention that she was the mother of one of Chelsea's favorite people.
Who?
You don't know?
I don't know.
She's the mother of Mariska Hargitay.
Oh, I did know that.
Yeah, Jane Mansfield was her mom. Of course, there's a lot more information about her that we'll talk about on next week's episode. Any final thoughts, guys?
Yeah, I'm ready for this all to be over. I want to be back in the garage again.
You're talking about this particular episode?
No, the coronavirus.
True. We want to plug the podcast itself. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're hearing this. You can reach out to us on Twitter. We're at Cinema Chop Shop. We're on Facebook. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. Also, our email address, which I check all the time, literally now, is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And then beers that we check in on the show will be checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And then we want to say farewell. Thank you to you, the listeners, the Chop Choppers out there. Stay safe. And remember to watch Chop Retrofit.
And tip your bartenders.